ticket. Pat Lasky came to Madison in 1966 as a student in the graduate course in pediatric nursing and completed both her master's and doctorate at UW-Madison. After having worked as a teaching assistant while taking classes, she was appointed first to the faculty in 1968. She later enrolled in the doctoral program, serving as a lecturer part of this time. She has been on the faculty since 1980 in a variety of capacities, including an appointment as interim dean from January 2000 to January 2001. She is now executive associate dean. Pat, let's start with some personal information.
Okay. I was born in Gary, Indiana on September 10th, 1941. My mother and father, my father was William Lasky, born in Little Falls, Minnesota, and my mother was Mary, her maiden name Yesh, born in Gary, born in actually Monessen, Pennsylvania. I have one brother, he's 7 years older than I and continues to live in the northern Indiana area.
And now, tell us why you decided to go into nursing.
That's a good question. From my early childhood, at least in my own recall and in what people have told me, I always wanted to be a nurse. I wasn't sure how I came to that focus, since we didn't have anyone in the family that was in nursing, nor did I have that much connection with nurses. But I always wanted to be a nurse. I can remember talking to the office nurse of my then general practitioner, and she gave me the advice that I should go to college. And so as time came to after high school to go off to school, I still was clearly directed to becoming a nurse and wanting to go to a baccalaureate program. At the time, living in Indiana, the nursing program was exclusively at Indiana University down in Bloomington, and I happen to have attended a high school that a fair number of the graduates went to school, and most of them went to Indiana University. So I didn't want to go kind of what I perceived as a continuum of my high school. So I actually looked at Loyola University in Chicago and decided that was too close to home. It would have been a commute, more than likely. And so then, actually, a friend of mine was going to visit Marquette with her parents, and I went along and ended up deciding on Marquette University as my choice. Those were very rich years of, like everyone else's, of collegiate experience. Probably, as a nursing student, one of the things that I remember the most was probably actually not liking nursing very much. Debating about what I would do when I graduated, and had an experience when I went into pediatrics as a clinical rotation of having an instructor, her name was Rosemary Kangri, actually she just recently died, who challenged me with a problem of a young infant who had extrophy of the bladder, and I was caring for this infant, and she said at the end of my clinical day that I needed to figure out how to help this young infant not have skin excoriation from the urine that was on the skin. And that challenge kind of has literally changed my whole life. I went back to my room and pulled out every book I could find, trying to figure out a way to protect this infant's skin. And what it did is just told me that nursing could do something to change the conditions. And from that point on, I finished school, and I haven't done anything else but pediatric nursing for the last 30 plus years. I graduated in 1963. I initially took a position as a diabetic camp nurse with the Wisconsin Diabetic Association. And looking back on it, it was probably a very naive thing to do, because these children were very ill, and although we had a lot of staff, they were quite challenging. They attended a regular camp, and there was a cabin that was just children with diabetes. And we worked closely with the physicians who sponsored this camp. But I had that experience for the summer, and then had early in the spring gone out with some of my classmates to Denver, Colorado, and had already secured a position at Denver Children's Hospital, where we then went. There were actually two of us that took jobs at Denver Children's, but there were four of us who went out to Denver and took a staff nurse position at Denver Children's, which was my really true first nursing position. I then had a number of staff nurse positions. I actually had planned to go on to graduate school at University of Colorado, and when it came down to the wire, I decided I wasn't ready at 1 year post baccalaureate education to go to school. So I decided to go off to California, again with a classmate, and took a position. Actually, again, it's kind of your naivety of being young. We thought, because when we went to Denver, there was an acute nursing shortage in the country about that time, and at Denver, you could almost call at noon and go to work at the evening shift. We thought that would be true in California, and it wasn't. Especially, we were targeting going to San Francisco, and California, many people hired on to permanent shifts, and although there were openings, they, you know, for a young person thinking about working permanent nights or permanent PMs wasn't really the answer. And then also, although pay was better than in Colorado, the cost of living in San Francisco was prohibitive. So we ended up choosing to go to Sacramento, and did hire onto a permanent 3-to-11 position at Sutter Community Hospital, which was a large, quite progressive hospital in Sacramento, and they had a 60-bed pediatric unit. So it was a large pediatric unit that served pretty much the Inner Valley of California, and got a great deal of experience there. I came very filled with just wonderful ideas of how children should be cared for from Denver Children's, and had some effect in changing practice at Sutter. But also learned a lot. They were, just to give you historical, they were just starting to put pacemakers into children. Real early work of doing aggressive surgical intervention with children, valve replacements and the like, which was really cutting edge in that at that period of time. And now, you know, some of the things they do are just phenomenal. But we would work, they had a 4-bed intensive care unit. We'd have these children who had cardiac procedures. I then did decide to go to school, and so it had a couple of jobs. I came back to the Midwest and worked prior to starting my master's degree up here at Madison in East Chicago, Indiana, at St. Catherine's Hospital as a staff nurse, and then kind of continued on that when I would have breaks to some extent over the holidays, over the long Christmas holiday, would do staff nursing in Chicago, Indiana. And St. Catherine's also was a fairly progressive regional hospital serving a wide area of northern Indiana. And then just to comment before I go into my educational experience, I also worked in between the years of my master's program at Central Wisconsin Colony then. It's now Central Wisconsin Center, and I worked covering being responsible for almost 200 children on one of the units, or a combined unit, and again, that's kind of historical, because now the philosophy of keeping children in institutions such as Central Wisconsin Center is no longer.
And this was for the developmental units.
Yes, right, mm-hmm. Exactly, right. And you know, now these were all young children. They were all somewhere under the age of 10, and now those children are in foster homes and no longer institutionalized. So back to then school and that the progression. I came graduated from undergraduate with the intent of going on to school, and I think with the intention of being a teacher. That wasn't as clear to me, but I think that was one of few choices. Clinical nurse specialists weren't, or nurse practitioners weren't part of the picture in those days, so clearly you went to get your master's to teach. And I had wanted to come back to the Midwest, having been out west for a couple of years, recognizing I was a pretty hardcore Midwesterner, and basically wanted to get back in the area. So I looked at two programs at the University of Minnesota, had a nursing education emphasis, and an option in pediatrics. And the University of Wisconsin-Madison, actually I read an announcement of a new program in the American Journal of Nursing out on the West Coast. And you want to stop? I have the phone's ringing. As I was saying, I had the choice between Minnesota and Wisconsin's new program, which I read about, and came in. Wisconsin's emphasis was on pediatrics with kind of the option on education. So I had to decide as to what best fit my needs. And I think I came early in the summer and interviewed with the faculty here at the university, Florence Blake and Mary Lou Byers are the two that I recall having conducted the interview. And then later in August, heard that I was accepted and they offered a traineeship. And I can't really recall specifically, but it kind of influenced me to come here instead of Minnesota. And I actually was most impressed with the emphasis on pediatrics. To be quite honest, and this is very poor on my part, I did not realize that Florence Blake, who Florence Blake was, has been kind of one of my limitations over my life. Actually, she was the author of the textbook of my pediatric course, and I didn't really realize it till after I had completed the interview, or that her programs were as well regarded in the development of master's education, and especially in pediatrics. So it probably helped me because I was a little naive. I wasn't intimidated by the interviews, and apparently had interviewed well. Florence and her colleagues were very dedicated to advancing the care of children. And one thing I can recall about the interview is they asked you how you got along with your mother. And this was apparently one of their key screening tools that they used, I guess looking at relationships and interactions that were relevant to then some evolving knowledge about children and hospitalized children and responses to separations from caretakers. And you have a question here about anything especially interesting or unusual, and actually that's what came to mind. It was at the time that in the primate lab, Harry Harlow was doing his work research on what came to be known as mother love, and he was looking at the study of a surrogate mother, surrogate monkey mother, which was a cloth apparatus that had a feeding apparatus on it, and then infant monkeys who had their real mothers, and he was comparing their reactions and development to this surrogate mother and their real mother. And we were sensitized to this work, and it's something that's kind of influenced my thinking along, because it was kind of the early stuff on attachment, and also more of the putting more the theoretical knowledge around the responses of children to mother's caretaking and caretakers, and being separated from not just having nurturing and a shelter, but also having a positive interaction in their environment. So that's probably one of the more memorable. There were a lot of memorable experiences. We were a class of a small class of seven. One of the kind of the negative parts, we were probably among the youngest group that Florence had ever educated. She usually, I think at Chicago and at Yale, had nurses who were farther along in their careers. We, I think over half of us were only 1 or 2 years out of school, and we were a challenge to her. And she, if she were here today, would continue to say we probably facilitated her in thinking about retiring. Because we were not, we were, I suppose you could say we were rebellious in a way. We were not willing to give 24 hours of our lives to our graduate program or to what interested her. And I can remember she would call us on the weekend and say, here's this interesting thing happening. And some would come in and some wouldn't. But I also think she learned from us, and subsequent to that, not only when she was still teaching, but her predecessors would really recruit younger students, younger in the sense of their mid-20s versus individuals in their kind of middle career or later career. And I don't know all the details, but of the seven of us that I have been able to track down, I know four of the seven went on to do doctoral work, completed their PhD, and three of us ended up being associate deans. So it's pretty
That's a pretty good record.
Pretty good track record. One classmate we lost track of, and so she as well could have had a outstanding career too. She married, and we never really could follow up with her. This was all in 1967-68 when I finished my master's. I interviewed for teaching positions and accepted a position as an instructor here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in pediatrics, working with Margaret DuRose, who was then the head of the pediatric area, and continued to the evolution of my knowledge of the care of children through both Margaret and Florence, who worked with both the graduate and undergraduate students. I was promoted to assistant professor with only a master's degree, and at that time it was becoming clear that one needed a doctoral education to remain on a university faculty. And Florence did not directly encourage us to go on to doctoral study because it just really wasn't as common. But the thing she did do, and obviously with four of my classmates going on for doctoral education, she impressed on us the systematic study of the care of children. And we worked on our master's thesis, and so I think gained an appreciation of what doctoral study could add to not only the knowledge base of care of children, but you know, to our own practice. And so going on, I was on the faculty for I think 6 years and left and resigned as an assistant professor, and then started my doctorate here on the campus. Having been on the campus as long as I had known of the opportunity to do an independent doctoral degree. It was called a committee degree. And so I didn't really enroll in a program per se. I identified five key faculty, one in child development, one in medical sociology, one in psychology, and in nursing. And what was the fifth area? Sociology, psychology, nursing, human development. I guess that was kind of overlapped, in medicine. I had a physician on my committee. And I basically designed my own program, and they approved it and worked with me through my prelims and in the design of my doctoral study and my research, which I focused on, or the title of my dissertation was The Role of Parents in the Socialization of Preschool Children's Health Knowledge. And I was very interested, concurrent with my interest, the School of Nursing had just completed a significant baccalaureate kind of curriculum development project where they defined a curriculum in primary care and secondary care, primary being more community-based care, early intervention, prevention, screening. And when we started, I worked on that curriculum during my doctoral program, and even before I left for my doctoral program. And I was very interested in what primary care was about, and so it evolved into, you know, what was early prevention strategies for children. And so I was interested in how children learned about health care, or not health care, but health behaviors. Mm-hmm. So that was my work. I finished my doctorate in 1980, the whole time basically being a half-time lecturer in the School of Nursing. And I must comment that the school, under the leadership of Valencia Proc, supported three or four, maybe even more, five of us to do doctoral work by giving us half-time appointments, I think literally at the salaries that we were at when we left the faculty. So this was a tremendous support of basically allowing a number of faculty to get doctoral preparation. I also, I think, was the first person on this campus to have a nursing, an NRSA, which is a nursing research, I can't remember what the letters are for, but it was through the Division of Nursing, and it was an early attempt of the federal government to support nurses to go back for doctoral education, providing a stipend. And it's still in existence today as a major investment in helping nurses to complete a doctorate. So that's kind of, you have a question about the pattern of graduate education was similar to many nurses that work part-time. And I think it was the stage, again, I went back in 74, so what, I was around in my early 30s. And being a single person, I was kind of sole support, so you really couldn't afford to just quit and go to school full time. And like I said, as I described, this School of Nursing was very cognizant of the need of having more individuals with doctoral preparation. And we weren't necessarily told that we would have jobs here. That wasn't the point. It was basically getting individuals prepared. And of those, two colleagues at that time, Joy Calkin, went on to be a dean and also to be a provost of a major university in Canada, and Mecca Cranley went on to be a dean in Buffalo, New York. And so again, it was a good investment in the profession. And I'm sure some of the others I can't remember right now went on to do really, you know, to give back, if you will, to nursing through nursing education.
Okay. Now let's talk a little bit about your role on the faculty. What kinds of challenges or problems did you face as a teacher?
Well, you know, I thought about that question, and I guess, you know, I don't know that maybe you block it, but I don't really remember problems per se. I think I found challenges probably true of any teacher, and that's engaging students in the excitement of learning and creating a kind of learning environment that keeps them engaged. My early teaching prior to doctoral study was really clinical teaching, clinical nursing, and you were challenged with the students who liked pediatrics and who didn't like pediatrics, and trying to help them, those who were afraid of children and those not afraid, but you know, really didn't know how to relate mm-hmm. to children. And so that was always trying to communicate what children were about, what families were about, to the students who maybe didn't have that much interest in it. After my doctorate, I came back on the faculty in kind of a different role. I actually came on with two interests that I have basically been my interests since my return to the faculty, and that's nurse practitioner education and the education of registered nurses, or the opportunity for nurses to return to school and get a baccalaureate degree. And I'm not sure where that came from. I think that interest probably came from my early work with curriculum, and also with some colleagues here, Helen Marsh specifically, who is a faculty member very devoted to offering educational opportunities to returning RNs. So I think it's just mainly communicating the excitement of the care of children to the best I could. And probably the greatest satisfaction I've got from that is over the years, students who I had very early, especially during the clinical teaching, who've come back and said that I really influenced their career decisions, which is true of the teacher I had in pediatrics, who went on to have a career in the care of children. And so I think that's kind of the continuum that came from Florence Blake, and that you just continue to pass on. Nurse practitioner education, I find it as an area where I think you can, because of it being more independent practice, can make significant contributions to changing the health care of children. And that has been a result of students that I've worked with or projects I've been on. We, I think, can take responsibility as a school of nursing for really changing the nursing services of the Madison Metropolitan Schools here. Working early with a project of the schools, developing the role of the nurse, introducing the nurse practitioner as a role, and I think now something like the Madison schools have somewhere over 20 nurses prepared at the master's mm-hmm. level in pediatrics, giving direction to healthcare within the schools. We had a strong influence on health services in the Head Start program here in the city. So different projects that students have gone on to, you know, really influence care, and those are the ones that are kind of here mm-hmm. and that, you know, we know about, and hopefully others, you know, across mm-hmm. the country. That kind of leads into your question about being a project director for different training programs. Probably the most has been the nurse practitioner training, which I was either co-director and then became a project director up and through the early 90s. And we had a program that was quite progressive in the sense that it was part of our master's program, and it was probably variable, but many nurse practitioner programs were housed in a continuing education model or in medical schools, and they were less housed in schools of nursing. And actually that was a function of the early leadership of Professor Emily Campbell, who insisted that it be part of the master's program. And then her focus was on geriatrics and evolved into adult, and then when I came on we added pediatrics. And and I think that's been a stable program in the context of role development from the school, from the master's program. And today, although it's beginning to shift now, but through the most of the 90s, the majority of students in the master's program were really focusing on role mm-hmm. preparation as a nurse practitioner, both in pediatrics but across mm-hmm. the whole mm-hmm. all populations. Most recently, I've been interested in the work of providing or making accessible baccalaureate education to registered nurses, and that has been work that we started in the mid-90s, I guess, and have had two or three grants that have funded work of actually placing courses in distance education format, and I can talk more about that. You asked about the change in nurse practitioner. In thinking about that question, I think probably the most striking is the what I'll call is the institutionalization of the role. You know, the early pediatrics was the first nurse practitioner that was developed, and that was back at the University of Colorado in the early 60s. And as I started to say, the intent in the early 60s was to, Colorado was a very sparsely populated state, with Denver being the major center, and children outstate really didn't have any care. And the idea was that really a nursing faculty member and a medical faculty member who proposed to train, they were called then pediatric nurse associates. Train them in the components of well child care, helping parents to answer questions, and then having access to a pediatrician dealing with illness. But when then they realized that they also needed, there were a number of common illnesses, primarily ear infections and upper respiratory infections, that they could also prepare the nurses to treat. They were fairly predictable sequences of treatment, and they developed protocols of care, and so they were also prepared to do some medical management. And that was kind of the roots of things, excuse me, and the model worked quite well, and it was expanded into where we are now, where really nurse practitioners, if they so wish, can actually practice independently of physicians. Not many choose to do that. And this independence has come most recently here in Wisconsin with the legislation that has given them prescriptive authority. And that was a piece that has been missing for the past 30 or 40 years in the evolution of the nurse practitioner role, where the nurse could diagnose, but treatment was, if it were pharmacological treatment, was really then under the control of a physician. And now the nurse can prescribe medications for treatment, can diagnose. And as some people have begun to realize, it really has shifted nursing over into what might be the medical role. And the thing that's kind of most disappointing about that is nurses tend to become intrigued with the medical role and kind of leave the nursing behind. But at least in pediatrics, we put a stress on that. The key is really, you know, advanced practice nursing, that nurses, especially, like I said, in peds, need to deal with the nursing challenges, the responses to illness, and with children, the challenges of providing an environment, an optimal environment for growth and development. And so it's changed some, but really not that much, at least as far as peds go. It's more than the physician's role that they're really carrying out. So that's kind of what's dictated my work. I have not, through taking on significant administrative roles in the early 80s, have not continued with my own research program, but through other avenues, I think, have continued to influence aspects of care by literally facilitating others to be able to do that, and have worked with some studies around the original interest of self-care, health behaviors of children and ways that they can, families can encourage children to care for themselves and be focused on their health. That kind of segues into going into my administrative responsibilities. In 1985, a new dean came to the School of Nursing, Vivian Littlefield, and it kind of concurrent with that, there were changes within the UW system where the regents had decided to integrate the continuing education outreach mission that had been exclusively housed in UW Extension, a unit of the university system, and integrating where there were appropriate matches departments with similar missions. And there was a unit of nursing, division of nursing, continuing education in Extension, and that unit was integrated where appropriate on a variety of campuses, but the major, I think, affiliation was already in existence here between the School of Nursing on the campus and the nursing unit. And so in recognizing the need for the faculty to value this mission and integrate it as a integral part of our work, Dean Littlefield created a administrative position focused on, actually she called it, I think it was outreach then, I know it was professional services, there was I've gone through various titles uh-huh. of the position, but the intent was really that I was a member of the faculty, I was very interested, I at that time had been doing a lot of work on with RN education, so and had worked some with continuing education. So she recognized the need to have someone who understood the kind of the values and the directions of the faculty of the school. And so it wasn't, I guess I ended up in, I don't know how many people interviewed, but I ended up at least expressing my commitment to integrating the mission and having this become a valued part of the school. And so took on this associate dean's position, and it early on exclusively focused on continuing education and outreach activities. It was really the start of us beginning to reach out with credit education. We did a variety of things, faculty traveling, faculty producing videotapes, and a number of ways, and then also faculty getting involved in the continuing education mission and programs. And I think it's been a really positive relationship. It's still evolving, but the outreach education, continuing education has really served an important role, I think, for the school in making the school more visible to the state, the Madison campus being more visible. And as we know, the Wisconsin idea is still a very prominent mission of the campus, and so it's constantly being redefined. But just within the last year, the chancellor has again put outreach education as and the Wisconsin idea and lifelong learning and all those concepts as being really a key component of what the Madison campus is about. Another piece of that outreach, as I said, has been credit education outreach. And
incidentally, Pat, that's how it started in Extension, was with
the credit outreach.
Yeah, right,
is that right?
Right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to pick up all the pieces, but.
What comes around goes
around. right. Well, it was clearly related.
Yeah, I mean, right.
It was how you extended the campus, and
right.
I think what's happened is technology has made a big difference. And one of the key things that made the difference here was really a collaborative effort that was, and you're right, that what comes around, because what allowed the collaboration to occur was the support of UW Extension.
Let's talk about the collaborative nursing degree program,
okay.
Because in 1995 you were a co-recipient of Extension's Award of Excellence for your contribution to this program. And to me this was a remarkable program because it did get cooperation with all the schools of nursing in the system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I can kind of tell you the history. We were working very closely with Dean John Schmidt, who was Dean of Continuing Education, and the integration of the mission for continuing education had some glitches, not glitches, but some issues, and that was that all of the positions, the FTEs, and the budget stayed with continuing education, or with UW Extension, and staff and the mission itself were integrated into the School of Nursing, and so that required a constant negotiation for a budget and for positions. And at one point we had some position open, and Dean Schmidt came and met with me and said, we're interested in having more collaboration. That one of our charges as in UW Extension is to, from UW system, is to promote collaborations across campuses. And in fact, he wanted this to focus on continuing education, because we had continuing education missions at Eau Claire and Oshkosh and Milwaukee and Madison. And so he asked me if I would help with that. Actually, it was a little bit of a bribe, because we had a position unfilled, and he said, I'll leave the position if you'll spend some time doing this. As I recall it, it may not have been that direct. But so I said I would be interested. He had just hired a new associate dean, Mike Offerman, and the two of us were going to work together. And I would be kind of the front person for nursing. And Dean Offerman had worked on some collaborations in Iowa, and he was quite skilled in facilitating process. So a meeting was called of the continuing education representatives from the schools of nursing and the deans. And at that meeting, the deans said, what we're being lobbied for or being told there's a significant need is for credit outreach, for opportunities for nurses to access baccalaureate education, and that it was their preference that the collaboration would focus on credit education rather than non-credit. And so Dean Schmidt indicated he would support that as well. And so we started, Dean Offerman and myself and a staff person, and we traveled to, the four other campuses with a nursing mission. This included UW Green Bay as well, whose sole purpose was RN education. They did not have a basic program. They had a program for registered nurses. We met with the deans again on the campuses, and we met with key people within the nursing departments, and actually got them on board to proceed with a collaboration effort. And I've got to go backwards. There were some of us through a variety of different mechanisms, probably most significantly the Wisconsin Nurses Association and some subgroups, that had been working on access to baccalaureate education in a different way, and that was really giving credit for prior learning. And we had come up with some kind of, if you will, policy statements that people had agreed that they would give credit or put in place mechanisms to give credit for prior learning. So there was a lot of work that had occurred, and a colleague at Eau Claire, Sandy Dirks, the two of us sat back a few years ago and realized that we had been working on this collaboration for about 20 or 30 years. So it didn't come out of nowhere, and there were other people who had been committed to this. But really, bringing us together with a kind of a, what I always call a neutral partner to support the development of the collaboration was really the key. And I think in 92, there was a statewide study supported by UW Extension, Continuing Education, that did a survey of all nurses who might be interested in continuing their education, and also surveyed them in relation to their interest in using distance technologies. And at that time, like I said, we had primarily systems that were in place, a television system, a teleconferencing system, and another system called Audiographics, which was really a computer based voice-based system that used as well telephone lines and bridging. So we put this forward, and we found a significant interest, and although they probably didn't know what it was about, a commitment to also supporting distance technology or going to attaining a degree through using different kinds of technologies. And based on that survey, we went on to do some really extraordinary things. The group of five universities and their representatives basically brought together our curricula that we had in place, looked at the common elements, came up with a common really definition of educational outcomes, which translated into five kind of key concepts of assessment, health assessment, research, theory, community, and what's the fifth? I'm blocking here. Leadership, management. And with those kind of general concepts, we then kind of did an overlay of the credits we each had, and our credit degrees varied from 120 to 128 credits. Through Mike Offerman's leadership, we came up with a model that allowed us to and made a decision that we would have each program would keep its degree intact, but would collaborate on the teaching of the curriculum so that it was convenient. There were five courses in five universities, so we brought together, then the next stage was we brought together the faculty teaching in these areas of leadership and research and assessment, and put them in a room and said, come up with a common course, which they did in a relatively brief period of time. And over maybe a semester's period of time, these work groups came up with a blending of the courses from the five campuses. We then took their work and each went back to our own campuses and used the processes in place to get these courses approved. And the unique thing about that is it was the same course on all five campuses, or there were five different courses, but each campus took this portfolio of courses, had them approved, and had them put on the timetables of each campus with the same course number. So that Nursing 317, which is the course number for health assessment, was the same course on all five campuses, on Madison, Milwaukee, Eau Claire, Oshkosh, and Green Bay. And what that did was lay the groundwork that we then had the ability for students to enroll in the course on their campus, and that has come to be known as the home institution model. But the course might be taught at Madison, per se, to students enrolled in Milwaukee, Oshkosh, Eau Claire, and Green Bay, and Madison. But the teacher would be in Madison. And so using technology as a mode of delivery, the teacher literally taught on five different campuses, courses that were literally campus-based courses. But it's kind of a unique way, but it was really kind of the key of the collaboration, and it still continues to be the model that UW System would like everybody else to do, because we've been so successful in coming up with this common curriculum. And then what we did, this was these five courses amounted to approximately 30 credits of the nursing major. And then each campus independently developed electives, and we use a core number. We did not have each of the electives approved on the campus, but campuses have like a core number. Ours is a 590, which is contemporary nursing practice, and so students would enroll for that. We have such things as ethics, school setting, geriatrics as electives, cultural diversity as an elective, and then students would fill in what courses they needed to complete the credits they needed for the major. And probably the last thing that we've accomplished, we just accomplished that last year, which has kind of put this whole package together, is we've now signed, as a system of schools of the collaboration, a program-to-program, system-to-system articulation agreement, which students, and we've signed this with the Wisconsin Technical College system, where a number of our nurses are, well, in fact, now all the nurses are educated in that system. We no longer have any hospital programs. They can articulate, in other words, build on their program and come into our program with 60 credits of prior learning, both in nursing and in the areas of general education, in the humanities, in the natural sciences, in the social sciences. So in essence, the first 2 years, even though we don't have a junior college system in our state, it really amounts to a junior college degree, an associate degree, that's college transferable, which was not the case except for three institutions in the Wisconsin Technical College system. So now students can come directly into the university program with 60 college credits and then build the major, the baccalaureate major, on top of that. And so it's yet to be totally realized, but the collaborative nursing program really initiated this whole prospect and has laid the base for what I think is going to be a key piece of the future of nursing, and that is allowing nurses to enter practice when they have no other option at the technical college level or at the associate degree level, but to be able to progress fairly readily into baccalaureate and then master's and doctoral, because I do think we're facing what's being defined as a nursing workforce shortage, but it's more than just a workforce shortage. It is a workforce shortage, but we're never going to make it up. And my view is that we have to work smarter, if you will, and let nursing really define its work more independent of other systems. And in doing that, I think education is the way you do that. You need to have individuals who know how to think about those things. The continuing education piece has served a real significant role, I think. It's, from my point of view, its ability to respond to issues in a contemporary issues in a much more efficient way. It's allowed us to allow some of the faculty to basically promote new directions in nursing education and nursing research. I think significantly of Professor Nancy Diekelman, who runs who's been doing this now for 10 years or more, an institute that addresses qualitative research methods, and she brings individuals from all over the world to this institute. We've have some ongoing work with training nurse assistant evaluators to implement evaluation systems for extended care facilities, and we've now more recently, although distance education has been an early part of the continuing education from thinking of blogging, the nurse who did the early television, May Hornbeck. May Hornbeck. Yeah. And you, Signe, and Ruth Lutze with the ETN programs and the dial access and all the kind of tradition that's kind of carried on. And now we're focusing more. We've moved the collaborative program, and we're looking at models for our continuing education program to doing using technology more, and specifically the web, mm-hmm. internet-based education, learning on demand. You know, that concept, as well as our program, our entire collaborative program, within the next 2 years will be web-based. We will. The program is accessible now, but we're phasing out what was a core of the program, and that was the audio graphics. But all those things could not have been done without Extension and its support, and we would never have had really the access to that if the mission hadn't been integrated in the mid-80s. I mean, we just never would have known of the opportunities. And so, yeah, I'll always say that, you know, that partnership, that relationship has not only influenced non-credit education, but credit education as well. And then kind of toward the winding down the end of my career of sorts,
right.
As you indicated earlier, was responsible or took responsibility as interim dean for the school calendar year of 2000. And thinking about what challenges that, I was just talking to our current dean, Catherine May, and she's just about finishing up her, well, just early into her second year. She came in January of 2001. And I was telling her, I would realize that kind of at the end of the day or the end of the week, if there were some things hanging, that there was no one else who would even care about it other than me. You were just kind of in charge of everything. You know, you couldn't think somebody else was going to do it. And we were both talking together how, you know, that you're just in charge of everything. Not that you're doing everything, but you really need to follow through that things are working. And, you know, some of the tough issues, you think, well, now who could I get to do that? And you think, well, you know, if I don't do anything about it, it's not going to get done. And I think that's, you know, it was really kind of maintaining the school in a positive direction. Not that there was, I don't know how to say this, we didn't feel, you know, that we were leaderless in a way, because there's very strong faculty and much of the work of goes on, no matter who's in the deanship. But we had had some, clearly, you know, a disruption for a dean to leave kind of, not abruptly, but without not having another dean in place. And so the interim role, you were just kind of keeping the reins steady, I guess, and solving some problems. Probably one of the more significant things was there was a lot of changeover in the dean's office. A key assistant dean left too, and so there were a number of us who didn't quite know all the, if you will, the rules, and so we were just trying to keep ahead of the game. And academic administration, like anything, has become very complex with personnel rules, and that probably is the most challenging, knowing that you're really following all of the personnel support systems and having those in place and doing things, quotes, right in today's day of affirmative action and other kinds of activities. The faculty were most supportive. I think the senior faculty really committed to the school and keeping it stable, and I think that was, and clearly the dean's staff, who dug in. I'm now executive associate dean. It's interesting when you're quotes in charge of everything, how long it takes you to wind down. And so I'm just beginning to realize, kind of being able to sit back and really think through things. The executive associate dean role is really one of being an advisor to a certain extent. When Dean May came on, it was my preference to resign from what had been my previous role, which was both outreach and associate dean of academic affairs with a focus on the undergraduate program. And Dean May's reorganization of the administration brought on a new associate dean for academic affairs, and so I'm advisory to her in kind of transitioning, and advisory to the dean over some of the, really just kind of the history of where things have come from. We were just talking about some of the, my perception of the support of the graduate education here, and that we never really got new money, both at the master's level nor the doctoral level, to expand our graduate education. There was a shift of resources, inappropriately so, from the undergraduate education in the 80s. I think we had over 1,000 or 900 or so undergraduate mm-hmm. students, and now we're at about 250. And so, and that occurred over quite a period of time. But obviously, positions then shifted, and so it isn't that the resources weren't reassigned, but really talking about do we have enough resources, and should we get more resources, and that's going to be really a challenge for her. I'm also monitoring. We have two building programs kind of in the works. One which is really in the works, and that's the Health Sciences Learning Center. And one of my responsibilities is. So one of the projects is to monitor the development of the Health Sciences Learning Center. I spent a couple of years working on in the design, and it's now really in the construction phase. And then we anticipate this August getting Regents' approval to plan a new school of nursing. That's we've progressed to the point of that it's really the top priority for the 2003-2005 biennium leaving the campus, and hopefully it will continue to be a top priority within the UW system, and we'll start planning a new nursing building in really could be in the fall of 2003 or actually we can even start 2002 if it moves along, so that it will proceed and then with construction in 2005-2007. So I have kind of indicated I would continue, hopefully being able to work with that. But for the most part, it's really just a transitional position. I'll stay in this position for this coming academic year, 2002-2003, and then I think the dean will have a clear idea which way she wants to go with her administration. And, it won't be a formal position after that time.
Let's talk about some other things.
Okay.
Throughout your career, you've been very active in professional nursing organizations, including serving as president of the Nurses Alumni Organization and on the board of the Nurses Foundation of Wisconsin. And I notice it seems to me that year after year there are fewer faculty who do that kind of participation, and I wondered if you would comment on faculty participation in nursing organizations.
Well, I think there's an upside and a downside to that. I think faculty are committed in general and informed to the whole continuum of what's important to nursing, and that is not only the educational experience but also the commitment to the organizations that really support the development of the role and of the profession. And so I think faculty's involvement is really you know, the commitment to that recognition. The downside is that for a period of time, that's all you saw was faculty, and, you know, and it was kind of the same old.
Yeah.
And one really questioned whether, you know, that really was making, you know, talking kind of to yourself all the time, was that really making the difference? So, you know, I think it's actually positive to have more of the associations being, the leadership being from practice rather than education. And but then again, then you have the nurse administrators being the leaders.
Yeah.
So I think we're still challenged, and the profession is challenged, and we will be until, I don't know when, you know, that the staff nurse level, or, you know, kind of the grassroots nurse who struggles with being a professional and an employee at the same time, who doesn't have the flexibility that maybe, you know, educators have or administrators have, where they're kind of more in control of their own work and their own time to a certain extent. They can give time more flexibly. And that doesn't mean they're not working at night if they take their time away from their day job.
Yeah.
But so I think that's, you know, it's like I said, it's good and bad to have the leadership. But I think, you know, I've observed with the Wisconsin Nurses Association, you know, with Sigma Theta Tau, with the alumni, that there seems to be a trend that if you will, more, you know, just the everyday nurse is getting more involved. And I think it's difficult, like I said, because of multiple roles with both being an employee and then continuing that. Most nurses are still women who have family responsibilities,
families,
you know, and the time, you know, that people have to give to association and to commitments. But it seems like our organizations are getting stronger, I think. Maybe not in numbers, but in impact. And clearly, I think the Wisconsin Nurses Association, and that's dependent on its leadership, but is really seen to be the voice of nursing. And they've put together more coalitions so that even though the numbers are small, that the impact is large.
Okay, what about some major changes you've seen in the school of nursing? Because you've been here a while.
Well, you know, there's always the things that continue, but I think the school has had major transformation during my time on the faculty. I mentioned that we had a large undergraduate program early when I came on in the early 70s. We had a small master's program. We did not have a doctoral program. We now have a small undergraduate program, but a very unique, I think, undergraduate student body. Our student body was always good, but we are the most competitive undergraduate major on the campus as far as being able to get in. Within the last 5 or 6 years, our admitting GPA is over a 3.0 on a 4-point system. We have an honors program in the undergraduate program. We're in the early stages of talking about an early entry doctoral program, which will try to identify gifted and goal-directed undergraduates who see as a goal doctoral education and facilitating moving through that. Not necessarily speeding it up, but hopefully speeding it up, but clearly getting them involved in doctoral education early, chronologically, in their chronological age early, where now the pattern is really late 20s, early 30s, and trying to get doctoral candidates who exit doctoral study in their late 20s rather than just starting. We have a master's program that at any given time enrolls between 100 and 100 to 150 students versus the 7
right.
or 8. And we have a large doctoral program that's been around since the mid-80s and have graduates who are on nursing faculty all over the country. So we have really, I think, come into our own over the period I've been here to having faculty involved in all missions of the university, strong research programs, excellent teaching programs, and as well the continuing education. So it's really a very different place. And yet many of the same values, you know, are mm-hmm. here. The School of Nursing, I always say it was kind of late in coming into its own in a way. I can still recall when we were doing the early work for the development of the doctoral program, we brought in individuals from all over the country who had major programs, and it just struck me that they had master's and doctoral programs in place for 20 or 30 years, and we were just starting, you know. But we've moved very rapidly into what I think is a position to be among, you know, not the top tier, but the second tier of nursing schools in the country. And, you know, some of us don't even want to be in the top tier because, you know, that brings different things with it. Mm-hmm. So I think we're solidly placed. I think we continue because this campus is the flagship, if you will, of the UW system. I think the nursing school is the flagship, and I think Dean May is going to really continue that position and strengthen it. Even though the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee has a doctoral program, their emphasis is really on different issues, on urban issues. Mm-hmm. You know, they really have an urban commitment, and I think we have, the broader mm-hmm. definition of our commitment here. So I think it's been a significant time of change, and if we get that new building, it'll cap it off,
right.
Because it'll be the first time that the School of Nursing has its own building, you know. And interestingly enough, the medical school hasn't had its own building either.
No.
So, you know, you look at the progression of the health sciences on the campus, and I think we're right, you know, we're really right up there with the School of Pharmacy, although it's had its own building. It now has a new structure, the potential of the School of Nursing, and the fact that the health sciences schools, along with the health sciences library, are now at the west end of the campus. And the next, 10 to 20 years, it's just going to revolutionize the mission of the health sciences mm-hmm. on this campus by bringing all those disciplines together.
Well, as you think back over your career, what gave you this greatest satisfaction in your career?
Well, I think, you know, being able to pursue my interests, to stay involved in pediatrics, kind of moving into administration has kind of left, although I've continued to be involved in the pediatric, I haven't really moved that mission much since the early 80s and feel a little mix of satisfaction and disappointment. I feel a little disappointed in that, but to be able to contribute to the administration of the school, I think move, especially the outreach mission, has been really very satisfying to me. And I think my commitment to those two things that have allowed me to kind of keep a career pretty narrow in a way, but also to have been able to influence, the care of children through educating a great number mm-hmm. of students, and then also to have influenced education through culminating in this collaborative nursing program and making education available to registered nurses. You asked me to speculate a little bit about the future. I kind of alluded to that. I think one of the things that we've been toying with is the practice mission of School of Nursing. And although we're not quite ready to move into practice, and it's hard to define with the fact that we're in a small community, mm-hmm. technically, comparatively to, you know, a large Boston or Philadelphia,
yeah.
or Seattle, you know, what really is our mission in practice? That one of the things that I was convinced as we've explored this is that nursing schools who are housed in academic health centers, that where there is a university, hospitals as such, or at least a practice arena, where there's a medical school, where there's a school of pharmacy, or where there are multiple schools of the health professions, really, I think, are the future of the development of healthcare and its directions. A school housed in a university where there are no other health professions kind of functions in isolation. And we have the opportunity, and we'll, I think, have the opportunity through a Health Sciences Learning Center to bring the disciplines together to really come up with not only the knowledge of care, but how we work together as disciplines. And I think we will, as a School of Nursing, become much more influential in that direction because of just the nature of where medicine's going. You know, we have these phenomenal abilities to replace genes and change this and change that, but you know, it's still the individual who's experiencing this, and nursing's ability to you really focus on our mission of you know, helping individuals cope with illness and adapt their lives to new to this is still going to be critical. So I think, you know, we'll certainly make more of an impact with the research we're doing in the still evolving the discipline of nursing, but also doing that in collaboration with other health sciences disciplines. What's the most serious problem we face? Well, we still face the issue of being a profession that hasn't really found itself yet, whether we're a job or whether we're a profession. I mean, you probably have had, you know, that whole continuum of, and I think we're threatened by this workforce issue of turning it into a job, getting the work done, and that's what I mean by a job, getting the everyday-to-day work done, and not being seen as a profession that defines our work, and not being in charge of our work. And until we become in charge and change the systems within which we practice, we're very vulnerable, because we're basically doing what our, if you will, employers want us to do.
What people tell us to do.
What people tell us to do. And and that's got a ways to go yet, but I actually think, like you said, this shortage of people to do the work will allow, I think, nursing to separate itself and to be in charge of the work or the outcomes of the work, not doing the work. But that will, you know, that'll be controversial, because we've held on to being at the bedside, and I'm not sure we can stay there. I think we need to have others at the bedside or doing the hands-on kinds of things, and that we need to be the directors of that. And I don't know exactly what that'll look like, you know, what that'll amount to, but I think it's this is a very critical time.
I think so too.
Nursing can disappear, as we, you and I, value it, very quickly. Yeah. Within the next 10 years, it can disappear from universities, because we continue to also be a, you know, still a very high cost program, and we value, you know, having the hands-on experiences yet at the undergraduate level, which I think are important to understand what practice is about. But I don't think we're, you know, we're going to be able to continue to prepare a workforce that is of enough volume to do that kind of the work that we've more traditionally identified with. And so it's a challenge for sure. It'll be interesting to look back and see what happens over the next few years.
Well, any other comments?
No, I think you talked me out here.
Well, thank you very much.